Welcome to the Rose Podcast number 677.
I got to, hey, I heard of that place, Montana. Exactly. Which is why, if you're in Montana, you're probably looking for something to do. Well, if you go to Missoula.
I've performed in Missoula.
Oh, you have?
It's a cool town.
Well, now they have a convention.
They have
a sci-fi convention. MISCON 29 is coming up in the end of May.
Nice.
May 22nd to 25th, they've got a cosplay contest, they've got panels, and their guest of honor, Terry motherfucking Brooks.
Nice. Yeah, Missoula's a great town, and I recommend it. So if you're in that area,
So if you want to be in a great town and now see a Spider-Man walking down the
street. Screw it. Even if you're in the Idaho Panhandle, pop over.
Oh, yeah.
If you're in Spokane, pop over.
Guys, Nerd Party, Missoula, May 22nd to 25th.
Montana, home of Reggie Watts.
Really? Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, original home of Reggie Watts. You got something, Katie?
Yeah, I just want to remind people that if you're a comedian and you want to enter a contest to be on the Nerdist stand-up cluster.
Yes.
And also open for you at Comic-Con.
That's
you can do that. You can go to totinosliving.com and submit to become that.
Yeah, so submit like a 2 to 4 minute video, basically. You're submitting a 2 to 4 minute video, yeah. And we're trying to, because, you know, the thing about comedy is you get very myopic and you go, oh, well, I know everyone who's out there, but you don't. And so, you know, Totino's gave us this opportunity to find someone and then like fly someone out, be on the cluster.
That's awesome.
And take someone to open for me in San Diego.
And the cluster is June 8th, and then the show at San Diego would be July 10th.
Yeah, the cluster is June 8th at Nerd Melt, and so we'll have a ticket link for that soon, and you can come. And I didn't do one last year because I just got super busy, but if you go back, you can listen to the other stand-up clusters on the podcast.
Yeah, we should post
the old ones all in one page
on
the website just so people can catch up, because they have some good, there's some good folks in there.
Yeah, there's some people now that have like totally, you know, blown up.
I think Pete Kamel.
And Ron Funches.
And Funches.
Yeah.
And
Bronger.
Bronger and Adam Caton Holland. Yeah. Like there's some good ones in there. There's some good ones in there. This episode of the podcast is Kumail Nanjiani. We just referenced him as being in the stand-up cluster.
Who?
Kumail.
I've never heard of him.
Nanjiani. Kumail? He's got an indoor kids podcast.
Wait. You might recognize him from going, Emily!
He's
that guy.
Portlandian?
The Emily guy.
Well, maybe Silicon Valley is a show that you've noticed. The Sundays at 10 p.m. on HBO. Or the Indoor Kids podcast every Monday on the Nerdist Podcast Network. Or the Meltdown show, or
never
Comedy
heard
Meltdown.
Of any of these
what
things,
are these
you guys?
Central.
Meltdown, the Wednesday night show at Melt. You record podcasts above it on Wednesdays at Meltdown.
Oh, that's what that noise is.
Yeah.
And all those people. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it now.
Yeah. It wasn't just a rally. Like that was a comedy show.
A lot of people like hanging out with Adam Dorsey on Wednesday nights.
Podcast number 677 with Kumail Nanjiani.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Well, it's nice that we're all just sitting down now to begin talking.
Yeah,
let's get those noises in here just so we can put that in. Shuffling.
Yeah.
Good. Water.
Oh, no,
ooh, water.
A lot of them start like this, right? Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
I'm back now. Yeah.
Ow.
Now you have to
ask, you don't know who Jonah is.
Yeah, you don't know who Jonah is. You have to ask if you can swear, and then you have to ask, when do we start?
Oh, and can we also go, when does this thing come out?
Yeah, you can say, when
does
this thing come out?
Do the part where you don't know who Jonah is, you awkwardly ask, and dead air happens while Jonah then has to answer for himself.
Yeah. Cool, great to see you, man. So these are your assistants?
Well, sort of.
No, you say nothing.
Oh,
you say nothing.
Say nothing.
There's a script.
Let my bro hang here.
Yeah.
So is this microphone hooked up to anything?
We're on a show too together.
Oh my god, dude! I didn't see you.
Yeah, I've been doing this.
Hey,
for years,
how's it going?
No, good.
It's because we're on opposite sides.
That's true.
When I'm on the other side. I only know your left side.
Yeah, exactly. The mole side. Yeah,
I don't know your right side.
There must be someone out there who only recognizes like half a face. And like if they saw you from the other side, they would go, I don't know who that is. And you turn, you're like, oh, Jonah.
Just cubicle
Harvey
people.
Dent.
Yeah. Harvey Dent would be one of those people.
Those people who can't tell faces, I've read all about that. That's an interesting little thing.
Oh, yeah.
To have.
Face blindness? Isn't that crazy?
Face blindness. Yeah. And they also, what movie was it? Oh, do you guys watch Hannibal at all?
I haven't been watching Hannibal, but I hear it's amazing.
Hannibal has like...
I'm not going to excitedly declare I haven't been watching it like Chris just did. I haven't seen it.
It's great. There's one part where they test for somebody having a specific like mental issue by having them draw a clock.
Uh-huh.
And so they draw a clock and you see from their perspective it's a real clock. And then other people see it and it's like an oval with the four, three, like they're all over the place. Oh, jumbled
so
up.
Any kind of face. So even the face of a clock.
Yeah. Sometimes I think, oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, they can't even tell potatoes because they have eyes on them. So,
whoa.
Are you talking about Mr. Potato Head?
Yeah, they can't tell Mr. Potato. To them, it's just...
Because you just said that like all potatoes have eyes.
No, but they're called eyes, yeah, right? The little holes on the potatoes.
Those are called eyes?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
How did I live my entire life? And not, I know so much weird, random, obscure trivia.
This is a great question. How did you not know that?
It just escaped me for all these
years. You know what, Chris? You're right. They shouldn't be called eyes. Yeah. There's no reason for them to be called eyes. They don't
look like eyes.
Yeah. Huh? Like and a pile of shit has a thousand eyes.
Oh.
That's from Stand By Me.
Oh, wow.
Wow. It's a fun moment in the movie.
I don't remember.
This is my assistant, Jonah.
Hey.
Oh, God.
Hi. So he just references like pop culture stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The curtain has been lifted on this podcast. Yeah, that's all we do, essentially.
Yeah. He's done two of them so far. You asked if anyone had seen Hannibal to make
him.
A point.
I'm
Chris is wearing a Star Wars shirt. This is what we fucking do.
That's all we do.
To be fair, this is a Pokeball Death Star shirt, so yeah. It's not Pokemon.
We don't have self. What the fuck is that supposed to be?
Matt, you seem upset.
Why none of us have time to make two references anymore.
Yeah.
We've got
to be efficient.
Yeah.
We have to be efficient with our references. We have to mash things up.
Totally. What does that say to you? What does that shirt say to you? What do you want people to know when you walk in the room with that shirt on?
Well, Mike, Matt, unlike you, I...
It sounded real.
No, I don't wear things to try to affect people in any way.
But like, what is it? What when you're putting that shirt on in the morning? I want to know. I want to get inside your head. I want to get inside your massive walk-in closet in your Spanish villa.
It's not Spanish. It's a French country style.
Oh,
house.
I thought you were talking about the Palace of the Mind thing. That's not what that is.
My mind is a Spanish villa.
So you open your closet, and I'm sure it's lined with literally thousands of T-shirts. Okay.
Yeah.
You pick that one out.
Yeah.
You go. I love this shirt because
there were two reasons that I picked this shirt.
Mm-hmm. One is Pokemon. One is Star Wars.
Okay. There are four reasons I picked this shirt. One is Pokemon. One is Star Wars. One is that it's a new shirt, and it was at the top of my shirt pile.
Plus, it's gonna have a good collar. A new shirt. I like that.
The pile of shirts is a thousand eyes.
Ladies and gentlemen,
he does that all day long.
That's his one reference.
Yeah.
You know what? I want a T-shirt. Crazy idea that has one reference on it.
Yours does. The movie Stripes.
I my shirt is.
Jonah is on a tear. Kumail's shirt does have stripes on it.
It just has stripes on it. Yes. It would be great if the shirt like falls apart at the bottom like the movie does. Like at the base of it. Just and then the movie ends. Yeah. You
and
guys
then
get it.
They have to get in a battle camper and go in enemy territory.
What do you want? It's a great movie. And then it is. So many comedies are like that where you're like, great, right? All right, and then it kind of ends.
Yeah. Well, like a sketch.
Sketches are very hard to end. Sketches,
yeah.
It's fun to set up a story, paint a picture, let everyone know what the character quirks are.
Well, I think that's the beauty of Wayne's World, in that it could have been a movie that ended just like you're saying, but they instead decided to do every version of an ending movie.
I guarantee it was because they couldn't figure out how to end the movie.
That's a good point.
And also, I heard the original cut of that movie was like 35 minutes long.
Oh,
they had to go in and shoot a bunch more stuff.
I want to see that. The 35-minute, not even making an hour of television, Wayne's World.
That's what I heard the rumor on that was that they...
That's crazy.
I like the idea of someone like cutting a movie, and then when it's done, like, oh, fuck. This is...
Where's the rest of it? What do you mean?
Yeah, this is all of it.
Made a terrible mistake.
The script was 15 pages.
Yeah.
We improvised another 20.
Yeah. Where's the other hour of what?
B-roll, so you'll get it.
Yeah. Just do a lot of shots of Garth picking up shit.
It's just the Girthmobile, just like
Mirthmobile.
Mirthmobile running, like just driving back and forth. Yeah,
that's why they had to add the Bohemian Rhapsody song.
The entire song.
So now they was like, okay, we'll just shoot them driving around and shoot every song A Night at the Opera.
We'll just do the whole thing. But the problem is most comedies are too long now. So I like that one was like, well, 35 is too short.
Isn't it funny? It's funny though the way you can judge a movie where if a comedy is like 94 to 108 minutes, you're like, it's probably pretty funny. But the second it drops below 90 minutes, and you're like, 88 minutes. Whoa.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah. I remember like looking at the back of VHS going, I don't know about this movie.
I saw a movie recently. It was 79 minutes long. I won't say the name of it, but it was like kind of a joy. I was like, oh, great.
Why wouldn't you say the name of it?
Well, because... Because
it was kind of a joy?
No, it wasn't a joy.
You just said...
Someone's listening to it.
Oh,
like,
gotcha,
I'm
gotcha,
a 79
gotcha.
Minute movie? That sucks.
I just saw a 2-hour movie.
What was it?
White God.
What's that?
It's a Hungarian movie. Katie doesn't want to see it because it involves animals getting dogs in.
2-hour movies happen.
Yeah,
that's
they
standard
do.
Movie length.
Yeah.
It was, but there is no standard movie length anymore because they vacillate between 79 minutes and like 150 minutes.
Yeah.
Lake Placid, I just remember this because this was just
so
on
short,
How Did
right?
This Get Made. It was 87 minutes long.
Yeah.
Wow.
You get in. I mean, what's there to know? There's a giant alligator. Yeah. Get in. Get
whoa, out. Spoilers.
Yeah.
No, I knew there was a lake. Spoilers. I knew it was quite serene.
Yep. No, Jonah, it's Placid.
Yeah, but that's the feeling I got from
that. Synonyms!
There has to be a porn called Lake Placid, right?
I don't know
why.
And
it's just dudes thumbing in. That's what they have to do.
No giant alligators in that one.
No, that's probably
I've heard
a
that
fetish.
Term so many times in my life. And it never just ceases to just bump me out.
It's
the guy thumbing it in.
It's the sexual equivalent of phoning it in.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all been there.
You know what it is?
It's your body posture right now.
It's a very visual term. You see it happening.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to smear your penis into something.
Smear.
Just like,
smear it.
Sorry. It's
what
like,
is anybody getting out of this?
Yeah, not at all. That's like Plato. Like
I read a thing in my human sexuality book about old people having sex, and they do stuffing, which is this is before Viagra.
What
you take the flaccid penis and the balls and you put everything in there.
What
you just put everything in there.
Really?
Yeah,
that's it's what we have to look forward to.
Stuffing.
It's for old people. Well, now we have
stuffing
Viagra.
Instead of potatoes.
Yeah,
with eyes. Now that's a new thing. I'm gonna get to use that a lot.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Potato eyes. Well, now with Viagra, we'll be fucking till we're in our 90s.
But I don't think Viagra doesn't give you an erection. It sustains it once it. My dad took it once, and I just talked about this on stage at Beta Test last night because he. Years ago, he tried Viagra, and his tongue blew up, and he...
Oh, because he does a lot of cunnilingus?
No, because you're not supposed to let it sit on your tongue. You're supposed to swallow it immediately.
Yeah.
So it basically gave him a tongue boner, because it sat on his tongue,
And
his tongue basically inflated.
Oh, so it's like the same stuff. It's just like, oh, this is where the blood's supposed to go.
I guess.
I like the idea of a drug that whatever part of your body it touches, it gets
So if you
big.
Want like a Popeye arm?
Yeah. Like a Hellboy arm? Yeah.
You just crush it up and then smear it onto your... Now I just wait.
That's the...
I'm going to jerk off so fast.
My tiny flaccid dick, because... That's why I got the Viagra.
I'm going to have to thumb it with my
hand. Thumb it into your other hand.
Rotten.
I'm just going to thumb this into my right hand.
There's several sad things that paint that picture.
We'll be right back with more Hard Dick and the Boys.
Yeah.
Ooga.
So, Kumail, I understand you're on a situation comedy.
Situational comedy, yes.
I'm so excited that show came back.
Oh, yeah, and we're doing another season, too.
You're going to do a third season?
Yeah, it got picked up like right after the first
Fuck
episode, which is great. So, so at least another year of this.
That's
before
great.
We... All our dreams evaporate.
No, I think
dreams aren't really invested in the show. We just
enjoy it. Me and the boys from Silicon Valley.
Me and the boys.
The boys.
Me and the lads.
The gang. The Silicon laddies.
How was it?
What is happening?
That's a drummer.
Sounded like a drummer.
Moving his drum set out.
Oh, my God.
Lars got told to leave.
Yeah, so we're going to do another season of that, which is exciting.
Do you like do you like being as busy as you are?
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm sure you can relate.
I get it.
I don't like yesterday, we were supposed to, the only day that I had, we were supposed to go to the DMV yesterday. So we had this day blocked off for like a long time where I was like, this is the day we're going to go stand in line for fucking 6 hours because we need to. And then it happened so that we didn't have to go. So we were like, we're just going to do nothing yesterday. And it felt such a joy to do nothing. And then literally at 11 p.m., I went into my office to like study for my acting class because I couldn't handle it.
Well, you got a suite pad now with a nice pool and a games room.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a nice little, I just got a new arcade stick from Mortal Kombat. So
nice.
Things are looking good.
Is the goal to get to a place where you can afford to take a bunch of time off and not do stuff?
Well, we're going away for a week. This is what happens with me a lot, and Emily's really good about calling it out, is I will keep myself busy a lot of times doing stuff that's just running in place. So I'll just like pour my energy just to have something to do. I'll do something. Like, it's good. What I would like to do is have a long project and then several short ones. But then sometimes I just do several short ones, and then it's just stuff just goes away. Stuff just goes away. It's better to like, you know, be able to sort of do something that's lasting. You know?
And do you have time to? You probably don't have as much time to play all the things that you want to play.
No, I play like now that Silicon Valley's done. I'll play like late at night a little bit. Like I'll play, you know, I try and play about half an hour at least every day.
Yeah,
because I got to get good at Mortal Kombat because Ron Funches is he's out there training. You know,
yeah,
he's at the bottom of a swimming pool running with he's hooked up to little wires and stuff.
Ron Funches is you know it's don't let his boyish charm deceive you. He is a fierce competitor.
Yeah, he really is.
Because the last time he won at midnight, and he's won a bunch. I think maybe he's won. Ten or 11 times.
Yeah.
And I said to him at the end, do you get tired of winning? And he, without even taking a break, he just said, my goal is to reach Ric Flair's record 16 times. Like, he already has a thing in mind. Like, he already has a goal in mind. He
that
wants,
makes sense.
He wants, I was like, you want to be the Ric Flair of At Midnight? And he was like, that's right.
You should keep track of him. Have someone keep track of it. So when he does get to 16, you find a replica of Ric Flair's belt.
He already had a belt made. He paid $600 to have his own At Midnight championship belt made.
It's almost like he's a regular on network television.
Yeah.
If he gets to 16, I don't think you need a replica Ric Flair belt. I think you can have the actual Ric Flair
come out.
The dude show up.
Attach him to a belt.
Because he's around again. He's like making appearances and random stuff right now.
Oh, that'd be an amazing
show. So is Rowdy Piper.
Rowdy Roddy kind of has been, he's come to Meltdown and stuff. He does stand up.
Yeah, but he used to come and just watch from the back door.
I've seen him a couple times just watching. Matt McCarthy was there. Matt McCarthy was like, what you do is so important to me. And Rowdy Roddy's reaction was like, get away from me, you fucking crazy person.
What?
Yeah.
He must know at this point.
I was a little bummed out, but also Matt McCarthy, great guy, is very intense about wrestling.
Yeah.
If someone comes up to you and is like, you changed my life, you're like, I don't know how to take this. This is a lot of pressure.
Sure.
But Rowdy Roddy's best thing, I think, best fight is that fight in They Live. Have you guys, that him and Keith David do for like 10 minutes where it's just like they get tired.
At the end, the fight is just them
like panting and like pushing each other ineffectually.
So
it's
realistic.
It's so funny how that movie has basically stood the test of time. In a sea of, like, you know, let's put an athlete or a wrestler in a thing, and then we'll just put a weird... Like, that movie really...
Well, it's so clear it's supposed to be Kurt Russell.
Yes.
Which is like a... It's like, I wonder how...
Why didn't Kurt Russell do it?
I don't know the reasonings behind it, but it was in that string of, like, it was like The Thing, and then there was Big Trouble in Little China, and They Live was, like, I think, like, next on the docket, or somewhere within there.
Kyle.
Yep. And so...
I think that movie...
Kyle's not there to reference pop culture. He's there to confirm it.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Clarkopedia.
Well, that movie works, I think, because the themes of it are just becoming more and more appropriate. Like the corporations controlling us, that shit is just getting, we're just heading there more and more. So
that's what makes RoboCop still hold up.
That's why RoboCop still holds up. That is unfortunately never going to go away.
Yeah. I wonder, though, if Shepard Fairey, how he kind of based a lot of his art off of the the theme, the styles, the Obey stuff. I wonder if like that has helped keep that movie alive and in the consciousness. In a weird
I don't think a lot of people know that it's from They Live. I think people know it as Shepard Fairey.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
I feel like a lot of people, at least in our circles, if you say They Live, they're like, I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a household movie name, but but a lot of people who like, you know, weird sci-fi horror movies.
Yeah.
But that's so like, we're in such an insulated bubble. Like, we like stuff that nobody else watches. Like, when I go to North Carolina, people go to movie theater and then look and see, okay, so at this time, this movie's playing. Let's just see this thing. I think that's okay. Because I think to us, TV and movies are really important, and we take it very seriously, and they should be watched a certain way. Don't tweet during it, whatever. I think for a lot of people, it's not that important. It's just something they do. People, you know, consume things differently. So somebody had the idea of, like, movie theaters where you can text and tweet, and people got angry here. Like, well, don't go to those. I think that's, for some people, they don't think it's as important as it is to us. I mean, it's our fucking lives.
Yeah, you know? Patton talks about that in his book, the new one, Silver Screen Fiend. And he talks about how he's just, like, he was seeing like two movies at the New Beverly every night for, you know, 5 years in a row. But then in the middle of that, he goes back home to like his, you know, go see a movie with his old buddy. Like that he grew up with, and like how it's like they would go to watch Last Man Standing, and like right before the movie, it's a Patton kind of goes like, "It's so crazy that this movie was an American novel that became, Japanese film." Then there was like, you know, it was just like he's like, "It's so crazy that now it's an American movie based off of this Japanese Italian." And then like the guy's like afterwards, like, "Why would you tell me that? You know, it's in my head the whole time that I was watching some foreign thing or something." And like. And like he's like, I don't know, I just thought it was interesting. He's like, why would you tell me that? I was like that's dumb. I don't need to know that when I'm watching a movie.
City Mouse, Country Mouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But it used to make me angry. Like people will tweet at me during Silicon Valley and I'll be like, what the fuck are you doing? Don't tweet, watch the show.
Yeah. I hate seeing that. Like in this movie, like I go, oh cool, they watched that movie. Then you see them go, whoa, what a turn.
Yeah. Well, that's why I always hate, you know, if you, and thankfully I don't work on anything that makes me do this anymore, but when they're like, can you live tweet the show? I'm like, the people who are following me that aren't watching the show are just going to be annoyed.
Yeah.
You should live tweet Talking Dead. Every time something happens, just hold on.
I won't even host the show. I'll just do it all from... So what did it feel like when Rick killed that guy?
Can you ask the same question? Just refresh.
Just refresh. You can say it right there.
Get on your phones. I'll give you the Wi-Fi password. I think, you know, we are in sort of an observer culture, right? Where everyone's commenting on stuff rather than experiencing it. But I think it is because we have like so many options. Like the second... Well, so many TV shows do this where it's like, get your iPad open, and while you're watching it, it's telling you trivia about
two
the thing.
Second screen, bro.
I don't like that.
I don't do that.
When I watch Game of Thrones, all the lights are off, the world goes away, and I'm in Westeros for an hour. You know? And Katie giggles in a very judgmental fashion.
I love that horror movie, The Potatoes Have Eyes.
I can't get off it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The Potatoes Have Eyes.
Tune in for tonight's hashtag war.
Potato movies!
Save it.
Air Spud.
I love it already.
Nicolas Cage in Potato Eyes.
Yes!
What's the real one?
Snake Eyes.
Snake
Eyes. You just put the word potato.
You said it as if like, no, I mean, come on, like, Kamel. Yeah. It's the most obvious thing. Yeah.
Like the actual title was like, Tomato Eyes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Potato Air. That's Con Air.
Up in the potato.
I know. But we weren't potato-eyeing a movie. We were just potatoing a movie.
You hate it because it's too obvious.
That's
more layers to your joke, asshole.
You know, you had a good run at the top of the podcast.
That's what happens. Every time you call it out is when I start.
What are you talking about?
It's like when someone does like kind of an impression of somebody, you're like, oh, do it again. You're like, oh, I can't.
Emily's like that. Like, she'll say something, and then I'm like, say it again, and then it's gone.
It's gone.
When I worked at a golf course in college, and as a caddy would observe that guys would fuck with each other by going, I love that thing you do at the top of your swing. And the guy's like, what are you talking about?
Oh.
And get them super in their head about it.
Oh,
and
shit.
It would completely like fuck up their game because they were so focused on that.
I totally have that with Mortal Kombat. I do, where if I'm just doing the move, I'm like, great. And then it's like, oh God, I hope it works this time. Then it never works. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? And that's what I like about like basketball is like when Kobe gets hot or something, his body is somehow working. Where he can just shoot a basketball and it goes in no matter where he is. It's kind of impressive that people can get into that zone.
I'm sure that's Malcolm Gladwell's next book. The Hot Zone.
But it is an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, no, I think it's repetition. It's doing something a million times.
Muscle memory.
So that it's just programmed into your muscles.
Yeah, like, but it's interesting that your head can sort of get you out of the thing your body knows exactly.
I think part of it is like being a little dumb, I think, helps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Nick Kroll had that joke about how like stupid people fuck great. Because smart people are just like, oh my God, I hope I do this well. Is this where this goes? But I think that's true. Like, I think that's true with a lot of like actors too. Like, you find out amazing actors are like kind of dumb, and you're like, that kind of makes sense.
That makes sense because they're kind of like just a vacant vessel for whatever character they're going to play.
It's just like, just be really angry. And you're not like, oh, I hope I
just find
it.
That I work best when I strap a mirror to my partner's face, and then I just see
you
myself.
Fuck yourself.
Look at your fuck face.
Over and over
Chris,
again.
Too real.
What? I like the idea that you're missionarying yourself. It's not...
Just you put those legs up.
I like the missionary of everything. I like mac and cheese, spicy tuna rolls, vanilla. Like, I like the missionary of everything.
Okay. All
That's
right.
Just, and unfortunately, is my M.O.
Yeah. Yeah, favorite superhero, Superman.
He's great.
The missionary of superheroes.
Yeah.
Although now I think Batman is the missionary of superheroes.
He's getting there.
He's getting there, right?
This movie,
now it's become like Superman's not cool. That's the new thing, I think.
We have to break Superman to like
Superman. Superman hasn't been cool since he fought Muhammad Ali. This has been like an ongoing thing of Superman not being cool. Like
Muhammad Ali?
Like since Superman, like I think that was like the last time Superman was cool.
He like fought him in the street? Was it like racially charged?
No, it was a special Neil Adams. It was a Neil Adams comic. And he drew it and it was... The aliens took Muhammad Ali and Superman to this planet where Superman's strength was nullified, so he was just a regular strong guy.
So then what's the fucking
And he had
point?
To box Muhammad Ali.
Well, Muhammad Ali would have beat the living shit out of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Superman still knows how to fight.
No, he doesn't.
Really
he doesn't
know.
Have to. He barely
no,
he knows
doesn't.
How to throw a punch.
God, he's just super fast and strong.
Yeah. I disagree. Superman lost, but I disagree.
He didn't take
Superman
didn't
never trained.
He doesn't do kung fu or anything. Batman had to do ninjutsu and all that. Superman shows up and wins.
Yeah, Batman had trained with the League of Shadows.
Superman could also read a book about boxing very quickly and apply those skills into life.
But not on a planet where his powers are nullified. Then he's just a regular,
then it's gonna take
regular
him a long time.
Super
he's like,
buff
Yeah, give
guy?
Me a week to finish this book.
Yeah, I mean...
Guys, I don't like your attitude right now.
Yeah, but
any of
Superman
this.
Doesn't have to know how to fight. He just has to pick someone up by the throat and throw them into space.
Superman's technique is very poor.
Well, you think Superman can actually fight.
I think Superman can handle himself, yeah. You know, because he comes up against strong foes, like Doomsday, that Doomsday fight.
Doomsday killed him!
Yeah, I know, but it was a fight. They both died.
Yeah, but he has no technique. He doesn't know. Superman doesn't...
Guys, I will say for the record that I don't want to talk about this.
Does Superman fuck good?
Because the nerds listening now are way
Superman's,
into it, and I
Superman
don't care.
Superman fucks good.
But what if Superman got taken to a planet where his powers are nullified? Would Superman fuck good then?
Then he fucks normal, I think. Then he just fucks.
No, he's
like,
not good. He's too smart. He's a writer. He's going to be too much in his head.
No, yeah, he's going to be too
he's
much
gonna
very
be thinking
smart.
About his dad. Yeah. He's going to be weird.
Yeah.
Superman's
Last time
smart.
I was here.
I could have saved him. Anyway, let me thumb this in.
Think about space baseball.
Spaceball.
Spaceballs.
Think about Spaceballs.
The movie Spaceballs. There's some attractive people in that. That's not going to help. Chris, I have a question.
Please.
So you have like so many jobs you do every day, right? Different jobs?
Yeah.
Do you find... how do you switch? Is it a different gear? Like when you're like at midnight or Talking Dead or whatever it is... or stand-up, do you all feel like it's for the same brain mode, or is it different brain modes?
I feel like they are all they're all offshoots of the same underlying mechanism, but they are all different modes. At Midnight is a different, you know, At Midnight's more of a comedy mode than Talking Dead, which is more of a traffic cop mode, which is different than stand-up, which is I have to control everything. And so I just, you know, my attention span is such that working on a different thing every few hours suits me very well.
Okay.
I think I'd go a little crazy like the idea of working on a movie where it's like, okay, just, you know, sit in your trailer, we might get to you, we might not, like that makes me feel claustrophobic.
Yeah. But what I like about that is, so to finish, they'll talk about that. So you do have to like switch gears in your head. You're like, all right, now
it's
let's
not
go.
A conscious, it's not a conscious.
It just
decision.
Happens. Yeah. You don't have to. There's no like. You don't like hit up against anything.
No,
you just
no.
Like, it's
everything
just,
sort of has a preset mode, and I know.
Okay, and you can just switch, and you don't have to think about it. You just go do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've been doing so many different things for so long now that it doesn't really feel like. Okay, now I need to meditate to get to At Midnight. It's like, okay, now we're doing At Midnight. All right, now I want to go do a set.
What's great about working on a movie is that you have to do. First of all, there's so many people involved. I think that's cool. That
you like teamwork.
That 200 people made a thing together.
Yes.
I like the feeling of that. I also like if you're acting on something, you do it. You do a scene like 40, 50 times. You do it all these different ways, whatever. And then what they use is always
that's
so interesting.
That's bad directing and bad acting.
What do you mean?
That's too many takes.
It is a lot of takes. I'm exaggerating. David Fincher does, you know, that many. David Fincher does a lot. But we probably do a scene at the very, very least 20 times. Because there's a lot of...
A lot of coverage.
Well, there's a lot of coverage. So it'll be like... So if there's five of us in a scene, it's going to be one establishing shot, then two shots, then my coverage, then everybody else's coverage, and each time...
Why not shoot everything in that rig they use for bullet time on The Matrix?
That's a great idea.
I mean, there's like 100
cameras. What if all of Silicon Valley... I'm like, that's a great idea. And the next season, everything's just rotating the whole time. People are like, this shit sucks. Well, we shot it in
Propeller Head soundtrack.
But I like it's interesting. So I've been watching these episodes and it's like, oh, they used that. And then they took this moment and they did this with it. It's so interesting. Like, it's like a puzzle you put together very, very slowly as opposed to stand-up. Where all that matters is killing right then. Like, you have stories you're working on and you're fixing them. But even when the story is not done, the goal in that moment is to kill that night.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of done with that set, in a way.
I've been doing this show every couple of weeks called Beta Tests where...
Thomas did it last night,
he did it last night. Yeah. And the conceit is that, you know, me and two other comics each get 20 minutes, but you have to work on new material. And Proops did it. And Middleditch did it. And he was very nervous going into it. He was like, I don't know. I may not do more than 10 minutes. You know, I've just been opening up for Kumail on the road and I'm trying to... He's an improv guy. And so he's been playing more with stand-up. And he was like, I don't know if I'll be able to do it. And he was fucking fantastic.
Yeah,
and he filled 25. He did a little over 20 minutes.
It was the light, huh?
But it was just a couple minutes. And then it was.
Seems like you're really sticking to that he went over.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we gave him 20 and he did 25. Whatever, it's fine. But he really was fantastic.
Did the store have to stay open late?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's not just the comics that are affected by that.
Cover for the whims of this fucking diva improviser.
Starting to sound like the last time Chris did Meltdown.
Wait, what?
No, not you, but like you went on after someone went on for like 45 minutes.
Right. Yeah, that was so funny.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because you were like... They were like, do you want to go on before? And I go, no, let him go. I'm totally fine. And it really, really was like 40 minutes. Yeah. It was like a drop-in set, right?
Was it?
Was it a book set?
No,
was it a drop-in
I don't think
set?
It was.
Oh, it was a book set.
It was a book set.
It was a book set.
I mean, I can understand sometimes running the difference between 18 minutes and 23 minutes. Where you're like, oh, I'm sorry. But I know if I'm doing, like, you know if you're doing 40, 45 minutes. You know that.
Yeah. But, like, we have, like Aziz, whenever he drops by, we put him up at the end and we're like, do whatever you want. And then sometimes he'll do that long. But it's different because we told him he could go as long as he wanted. And he's up at the end, so he's not screwing over anybody. And the crowd is always so fucking excited to see him.
Yeah, they can leave if they want to.
But you're going in the middle, stick to your time.
It's a little...
It's interesting watching Thomas do stand-up because I think what stand-ups try and do is recreate moments, whereas improvisers try and find new moments.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to... take that approach, like trying to like rediscover something or like discover new stuff in the context of stand-up. It's interesting to see him like working on bridging that, because I think they're different in some ways.
They definitely are, but you can tell that the improv skills let him find what the beats of a story are really fast, and he can, if he's not hitting it right away, he can make really quick turns to find.
He's so quick.
He's unbelievably
fast. Him and Zach Woods on the show is just like, oh, you guys are just improv machines. Like they are so quick. They don't have that. They can like fuck good. You know what I mean? Like they don't overthink. they're very good and they're hyper smart overthinkers. Zach, I mean, you'll never meet anybody who overthinks as much as
But that
does.
Flies in the face of the thing you said earlier, which is that
but
smart
But he can turn it off.
Oh.
He's very good at being able to turn that off in specific contexts. So when he's doing improv, it's all instinct. He's just going with it. And then as soon as it's done, it's just like overthinking.
When you guys shoot a scene a bunch of different ways, is everyone bringing new information to each scene, or do you guys pretty much stick to...
Well, we sort of do it, you know, it's all pretty tightly scripted, and then we improvise and we'll find certain things. So we'll do some in the beginning. The issue is we're all, like, none of us are, like, other than Martin, like, serious actors. So it kind of takes us a while to find a good rhythm. It's also because we're kind of fucking around and we're children.
Right.
And then we had this new character, Russ Hanneman, shows up. Do you know? Did you watch the newest episode?
I haven't seen the newest episode.
That guy's great.
Chris Diamantopoulos. He's an actor. And he shows up, and we're all like goofing around, like takes us a while. And he's like fucking on it from the first one. He's got ideas on how to block it. And we were like, oh man, this is how we should all be. But we kind of like loosey-goosey, and then people like sort of do try different things. And then sometimes we lock into something, and then we stick with it. And sometimes it's about still like sort of, you know, trying to find it the whole time, and then ending up with something that, you know,
that's really funny to when you, especially when you to hear you say that, and to know like who the stand-ups in the group are and who the improv and the actor people are, and just how everyone approaches it differently. And when I don't know, I just feel like as a stand-up, you're like, oh, you know, we'll sort of we'll fuck around until we'll workshop until we find something, and we'll just see how it goes. And you're a little more in control of what you do.
Yeah, but I'd never taken acting classes. I just started a couple months ago. And I'm like, oh, I it would better serve me in every way to come in more prepared. Because my thing is like, I'll go in and we'll sort of see how it goes. We'll all work on it together. And it works really well. But you go in with like a plan and ready to go and ready to change it. That's like a whole other thing. Like when you see like fucking actors who are like really, really good actors versus actors who are just sort of themselves and good at being that, the difference is so huge.
Yeah.
Like some people are just charismatic and funny and it's fine, but then there's like Daniel Day-Lewis where you're like, oh, you have a whole process. Like you worked on this.
Yeah. And do you think, what do you think the delineation between, you know, like that natural talent and you carved a path in the asphalt to make this?
I think some people are just naturally comfortable in front of a camera, good at being in the moment, good at reacting and stuff. I don't want to name names, but there's a lot of people who are sort of that same part, play the same character every single time, right? And that if you want that, that's the best guy for it. But then there are some people. I was watching this movie last night called The D Train, which comes out in a couple of weeks, and it's Jack Black and James Marsden.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interesting watching them because Jack Black is playing this really uptight family guy who's like very closed and introverted, which is so against Jack Black's type, right? Because usually Jack Black is the crazy guy. So it was interesting to see what physical things he was doing to stay in that. And then James Marsden is playing like this Lothario sex guy. And to see like, I was watching a scene where he's just eating cereal, and the way he was eating cereal, you could tell, oh, this guy fucks good, you know? It was really interesting. It's a great movie. You guys should.
Do you want to get more acty roles, or do you want to get more roles where you get to be like a comic who's, you know, just like really funny?
I mean, I would love to be more acty stuff. I mean, I don't really do that right now, but I would love to be able to do it. Yeah.
Because you'll get the opportunities. I mean, like this show is going to, you guys are all going to get bigger opportunities.
Can we get Hollywood on the line and tell them right now?
They're here.
Oh my god. We're at Hollywood Center Studios.
I'm gonna play a superhero.
Yep.
You know who, like Ike Barinholtz? You know, yeah, he's going to be in the next... He's playing Jonathan Strange coming up in one of the DC movies.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Which is so great. Like, that's the fucking dream. Someone who's really funny, but he's really good because he played that Russian guy in Eastbound and Down.
That was great, yeah.
So you know he can do more than just sort of play that goofy guy.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's hard with stand-up because you're so used to kind of doing that one thing.
Yeah.
You're not as much a chameleon. It's like... Here's my voice, and here's who I am.
It's also tough because with stand-up, like you said, you have to be fully in control, and that's what stand-up is. Whereas with acting, a lot of times it's letting go of control and being vulnerable and allowing yourself to sort of let the moment carry you rather than you carry the moment, which is what stand-up is always you carrying the
moment.
Yeah,
and I think that's why a lot of stand-ups, like not all stand-ups translate to acting well. And when you see it, you're like, wow, this is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Seinfeld always was in control. And it kind of works on the show because it's a very funny show and that's the part he's playing. But I don't think he would say that he could lose himself in any moment ever, you know?
Well, he wasn't. I mean, he essentially played a heightened version of him, of his stage, himself. And all the craziness was everyone around him.
Yeah, but even that, like, straight men can be hard. But he was, like, such an observer and commenter on the show where, like, something crazy is happening and he's, like, kind of smiling. Yeah, he was, he figured out how he works really well.
I haven't talked to Emily in ages.
She's great. Her book comes out in September.
That's incredible.
Her book's done. It's done.
Officially done?
She wrote a book.
It's very exciting.
And it's
done. We got to have her on.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, have her on. It's done being written. And yeah, she did like 3 drafts of it. And now it's all done. Like no more changes.
God, she's so fucking cool.
For that. Dory's writing a book right now. When it's done, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Then she's got to start another one.
You know what I learned from Emily? I would do this thing with stand-up where it's like, you just got to wait for inspiration to hit you, man. I don't feel like writing today. I just, the power isn't speaking through me today. That bullshit. And I see Emily being like, no, you just fucking sit down and you do the work and you write. And some days you write good stuff and some days you don't write good stuff. But you fucking sit down and you do it. And she does that. And I learned that from her. It's like, oh, no, it's work. Good writing isn't always like, and then it was magic. And look, I wrote this like Breakfast Club. You hear he wrote it in a weekend. There's many other awesome movies that were written over years. Yeah. People like fucking writing and rewriting and rewriting. So it's work. Yeah.
So what do you think? What do you think you have taught Emily in exchange?
Honestly, I don't think I've taught her a damn thing.
No, of course you have.
I don't know. Jonah, what do you think I've taught Emily?
What not to do.
Yes. I'm an example of what not to do. Exactly. What have
Jonah's
I taught
Jonah's back
her?
On track. I love that little thing you do at the top of your jokes.
Don't point it out.
Don't do it. Yeah. Don't.
You do this little thing. It's great. Do that.
It was going to get in my head.
What have I taught her? I don't know. I genuinely don't think I've taught her.
I think that's kind of a weird question to ask him because it sounds like it's like, what good traits of you have you imparted onto?
Well, I always think it's interesting to find out like when, because I look at you guys as having like, they have a fantastic relationship and you guys have been together for
a long time now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just always interesting to hear how people make that work, especially when, you know, the life of a comic and being around comedy and being a performer, it's tumultuous and it's emotional. And so how do you make sure that you maintain and still get what you both need out of the relationship? And it seems like you guys do that. So I just...
Yeah. I mean, what helps is that we're in similar worlds and I really trust her opinion on the stuff I do. And I think she trusts mine on the stuff she does. So they're related, but separate.
Yeah.
Which I think really helps us. It's also part of it is like, you see, she's so, so talented. And I'm always surprised when I find out like new stuff that she's really good at. Like, I'm like kind of afraid of reading her book. It's going to be so good that I'm going to be like, it's going to like weird me out a little bit in a good way. But I love like seeing her in different contexts. Like today she found this letter that she wrote her parents when she was like 8 or 9 at camp. And I was reading this and I almost like started like crying because it was not like an emotional letter, but I was just like, suddenly I saw her as like this little girl, you know? So it's, I don't know what I'm saying, but
It's just interesting with her to like see, I don't know, different parts of her, because it's still, we've been together for 9 years.
But, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And you just had your 2 year, because I saw your nice picture.
Yes, yeah. Yesterday was 2 years of being married.
To your best friend, you said.
To my best bro.
That's it, your best bro.
Yeah, no, that was great. It's been awesome. It just gets better. It's just, it's kind of crazy. It's like, you know, when you finally, and like, Kamel, I can back me up on this. It's like when you're like, it's like, I love everything about this person. This is it. I got it. And then you get married. And then like, you have no idea that it can keep on getting better the longer you're together.
Yeah.
It's like, you get blown away by it like nonstop. It's just, it's incredible. Especially like looking back at old pictures where you just kind of go, you're like, well, I didn't even know this about her then. And like, it's like, and now it's like, she's even like, you know, more beautiful and more cool and charming than like, even, you know, than I thought. Enough to be married to the person. So yeah, it's great. And it's awesome. 2 years is, it's like, it's weird because you talk to like, you know, like from an Emily, it's like technically been six.
We've been married. I mean, we've been together 9 years.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, 2 years, like just sounds like nothing. And you talk to like even other friends of mine, they've been married. Like, it's like, it's like their 15 year anniversary.
My parents just had their 44th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
Whoa. Are they getting along?
Yeah. I think they, at this point, they can't survive apart. I think
that's the goal, right?
They grow into
because
like
the tandem collars. Then one of their heads will explode if the other one gets too far away.
Yeah.
Yep. Way to bring it back into the
Running Man,
Chris.
But that's what I thought of. I immediately thought of.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I think it just, as you get older, you just sort of become more dependent on the person you didn't realize you were so dependent on.
Yeah, but I think it's important to keep appreciating it, like, because you could take relationships for granted very easily. Yeah. Just like, oh, this is our routine, this is what we do. But I think it's good to break out. Emily and I travel a lot. She still says stuff that, like, I'm like, that is so fucking shockingly smart. Like, 2 days ago, I was watching basketball, and she was like, sports is just something we invented to trick ourselves into getting excited. What am I kidding? That's the whole world. Like, that's what everything is.
Yeah.
Just tricking ourselves to get excited about stuff.
Well, I'll be hanging myself now.
Yeah. I know, exactly.
That sounds great, Kamel.
Yeah, but it's like so...
He's right.
Weirdly, right. Like, profound. Yeah, I mean, what is anything? These fucking phones? What are we? We're on a walk hurtling through space. We're all nothing.
So are you happy with everything at the moment? Like, is this where you want to be?
Yeah, well, what we're trying to do right now is Emily and I wrote a movie that we're looking to get made right now. So that's sort of the next big project.
Yeah.
And that's what sort of we're focusing on right now. So that would be great. I have this thing where, like, I get focused on one thing and then neglect other stuff. I'm not as good as switching gears, which is why I was asking you. I'll get into a mode and then I only want to do that thing and I can't switch out of it.
Sure.
It's like you're always stuck in second gear.
Yeah. Yeah.
It hasn't been your day, your month,
I'll be
week,
there for you,
or even your year.
What if I didn't know the song and I was like, that's really profound. That is how I feel. I just want to jump in a fountain.
One told you that it was ever going to be this way.
Which is what? Everyone always told you life was going to be horrible. Who were your parents? They were like, it's very hard when you're a
Elliot
grown-up.
Gould.
Get out of that fountain and get a fucking job.
Yeah. I am happy, but like, I have this summer off kind of, so I'm going to like trying to figure out, like, probably do a lot of stand-up. I've been neglecting stand-up, so I want to do a lot of stand-up, figure out my next hour, do these acting classes, and then go back to Silicon Valley in October, and then, you know, see what happens next year.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to know that that's there, though.
It's great to know that that's there.
Helps
where you can sort
of
just
plan.
Well, it just also helps you go, like, it's very, it is a unique and special opportunity, particularly in this business where you can just go, and it's not like you can sit too long.
Never.
You can still see the darkness, but it's a little further away.
Well, it's it follows, like, it's the plot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's just like, it's always right there.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Being unemployed in this business, like, it's fall. And the hard thing is, if you're unemployed for a little bit, then suddenly you're not in the thing of being in stuff anymore. Yeah. Like, certain people are in stuff and then they're on a roll. And then if you get a window where you don't do stuff, then it's harder to get back in.
To jump back on.
And it's going to be like this for the rest of our lives.
But you have the gift that most performers don't have, which is that you can always do stand-up.
Yes.
You have that. And that is such a valuable skill set to have that you don't necessarily have to, I mean, you know, to an extent,
the phone has to ring sometimes. But if you didn't work for a year, you could go tour and build up, you know, and if you're crushing on the road, that's going to create more opportunity and you can get paid. And so it really is a fortunate, it's a fortunate path.
I'm so surprised at how much you tour. It's so important.
Me?
Yeah, you tour a lot.
Yeah.
I really don't love, especially when I'm working, I don't love traveling.
It takes a toll.
And then I have that thing where, because I get focused on one thing, so it'll be Silicon Valley, so I'll get stand-up dates, and I'm like, I don't want to do stand-up right now. Not knowing that this is going to be, you know, 6 months from now. I mean, I know it intellectually, but emotionally in that moment, I'm like, I don't care. I don't want to do this. And then Silicon Valley ends, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I don't have any dates. I should have
You got to plan that stuff way in advance.
Yeah, so now I got to be better about that.
Especially now, because you'll sell a bunch of tickets on the road.
Thomas and I went on tour for a little while, and it's fucking so much fun. It's so great right now to go out for us. Like, it's a good time.
I mean, I remember, I feel like it was only just like maybe 4 or 5 years ago where you opened for me in Seattle. And
it was the Music Box.
At the Showbox.
Showbox.
And it was for, and you got to pull out all the video game jokes.
Yeah.
And you were like, I can't believe I get to tell these jokes. I don't get to tell these jokes on the road normally. Yeah. And now you've so surpassed all of that in terms of audience size.
Well, it's great doing Silicon Valley because you get audiences that already like you. So you don't have to. For a comedian, I think the switch from having to win over every audience to not having to do that can be good and bad. It's good in that you can kind of do now the stuff that that's riskier. You don't have to do your first 10 minutes of easy stuff to get into that. You could just do it, but then also you can get lazy, right?
Yeah. So if you get outside your comfort zone and like you were just to pop up on the Comedy Store on a random night, you might be like, whoa, hey, what happened?
Yeah.
Why didn't you like me right away?
Yeah, I did some shows in Miami recently that the crowd didn't know me. And it was like, oh my God, I guess it has been a while since I've done this. And then it felt great to be like, all right, win these people over.
Yeah.
And it was awesome, but it was like a weird, different, it's a different feeling a little bit.
Yeah, but everything adds a little bit to the pie. So, you know, Indoor Kids and Meltdown and Silicon and you doing stand-up, like every little thing kind of helps contribute to that, you know, that broad idea of you as
we're
a
in a great time where comedians, we can do so many different kinds of things, like podcasts, like you could kind of do, and I think podcasts is changing how people do stand up now too, like people are more conversational and confessional and stuff like that.
It's a really
amazing time to be a comedian. I'm afraid it's going to change. Do you think it's going to change?
Well, I mean,
well, Hollywood's here. Let's ask.
I think, you know, change is inevitable. It'll always change, but it'll change into it won't change into something that's insurmountable, I don't believe.
Yeah.
It'll change. You just have to try to be aware of it or ahead of it or at least open and not going, you know, there was a sports guy who got all mad because esports were broadcast on ESPN2, and it was a lot of like, hey, look at these nerds, go back to your mom's basement. It's just like the fucking hackiest, shittiest, like, do you want to start stereotyping about what jocks are like? You know, like, we don't, and it's like, fine, you know, you want to shit on that, there's a young audience and they're into it, then that is old people talk, and you will be done, and so fuck you.
People always resist change, and then it gets busted through and then it becomes part of normal life. Like it used to be, you know, like the way gay people were on TV were always like, gay, super gay. And now it's like, well, they're gay, but they can, you know. I think in the beginning, there's a lot of resistance. Like there's a female Thor. People were angry about that. And then in a few years, we might have a female Captain America and no one will say a goddamn thing.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, people are always, the first time they hear about something, their defenses go, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then it's fine. It's all going to be fine.
Yeah. Especially these people who define themselves like these sports guys. Like, I like the Bruins or what did they play?
The hockey,
you know,
the UCLA Bruins play a bunch of sports.
Okay, but that, or even people who are like video game nerds, you know, like who are big into games, will like resist change, and then it just becomes part of it.
Dude, I would start watching ESPN if they started showing
some
like
of those games
e-sports.
They show are so complicated. I don't understand what, like StarCraft 2.
Well, Heroes they had the Heroes of the Storm tournament, and to watch it on a screen because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're intimately familiar sometimes, it can be a little like, wait, who's got the...
Do you know the game?
I know it somewhat. I'm not great at it. I've played that and League of Legends, which is another company.
Right.
It's not. And so I played both of them. And it is, when you're playing the game, you can totally get a sense of what's going on. But I'm kind of not a great spectator because I'm like, wait, who's got the... Where's the... I'm just bad about that.
Yeah, and that game is like sensory overload. I can't figure out what's going on.
Do you have to be somewhere? Because it's 2:30 and they just said you had to go at 2:30.
Yeah, so I should run out.
Dentist appointment with the Chinese guy.
What?
2:30?
No.
It's my favorite dad joke.
I heard that 2:30 dentist joke for the first time from Jonah 2 months ago on stage.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And I was like, this is the single funniest joke I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah, and I told you then, I wrote it, so...
that's interesting, Jonah.
What's your day like the rest of the day?
I have something right now, and then we're going to be editing Meltdown.
Nice!
Early evening, and that is... been going really well. That's fun.
It's looking
really
good.
That's fun, dude. I love doing editing.
Well, hated it last season.
No, I love the editing. I don't like the sound.
Oh, the sound. That's right.
I really don't like doing sound, but I think it's very, very important. Last year, we went in to see the cuts after the sound guy had been through them, and it was like the guy had put in like Big Bang Theory audiences.
Yeah, every little thing got it. Anytime there was a laugh, it was just like, big. And we're like, that's not how a show is.
And because we know the show so well, we're there every week, we know how that room sounds. So we were like, it's got to sound just like that. So we barely sweetened any of it. We just took it all back. But the editing is fun because it's backstage stuff. So you like... crafting a story.
You got the story arcs, yeah.
Yeah.
So
runners
like one night I just wore this new jacket I had, this denim jacket that was like a little fancier than
part
what I usually
denim.
Wear.
It's only part denim.
And it's all denim. It's just different kinds of denim.
Guys, save it for the Meltdown show.
But like he made fun of it on stage and then everybody was just making fun of it all night.
It was one of the best moments was like he's just wearing it backstage and then Adam Pally just dives in and goes like, I was waiting for you. You were the one that was waiting for it.
He's like, wait, are you shooting Wild Hogs 2 right now? And he said, this is the jacket I would wear if I was driving off a cliff. Which is so mean. But yeah, so that's we're going to go edit some Meltdown.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on everything.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
It's really fun to watch. It's always fun for me to watch like, where my friends, like, oh, they're doing this, and now they built this thing, and now they're here. And
yeah, we met at Tiger Lily, I think.
We met at Tiger Lily, and the first bit that I ever saw you do was the Benjamin Button bit, which I still love.
Really wish that movie had become a classic. So I could still do that joke.
Well, you get the...
classic premise.
Well, because I could do a joke about Forrest Gump today, but I can't do a joke about Benjamin Button.
Well, it's it used to be you'd have three opportunities in traditional media distribution.
Yep.
You'd have the release of the film in theaters, you'd have the release of the film on home video, and then you'd have the release on, so Benjamin Button's on cable the other night. But now the way that everything's released, so I'm binge watching Daredevil, like it doesn't really...
Exactly. Some movies stay, like Jonah can still make a Stand By Me reference and none of us will get it, but when he points it out, we know what he's talking about. I don't mean that in a bad way. That was honestly not supposed to be a diss. It just came out like that. Anyway, he'll make an obscure reference to a movie.
It's a classic movie. It's one of the first lines when you're meeting all the characters.
No. I honestly was trying to support what you had said. And then...
Suck my fat when you dime star hood?
Yeah, it's classic too.
Now that's a good one.
Yeah! I'm still training this assistant.
Yeah, but you can just Stand My Me references. But if I bring up Benjamin Button, people are like, oh, this is an old bit. It sucks. Some movies, some movies don't stick around.
No, it's your job as a comic to go in and try to promote films as much as possible to support the bits.
If I had a really good bet, about...
I really need this to be a classic.
Listen, if Wolverine Origins had been a hit, my God, I would have my new hour already out.
If they shot him in the head with an adamantium bullet, then why in the original X-Men did she not see the bullet in his fucking skull?
Wow, that is such a nerdy thing to say.
What? It's true.
It's good, but that's...
Danny Houston shoots him right in the fucking head, but then in the original X-Men, when she's doing the scan of his body and she says, he has adamantium, the bullet falls out. But there's no indentation in his skull from where the bullet would have... No, the bullet doesn't fall out.
Doesn't it? It's adamantium.
You're thinking about the first time he gets shot when he's on the porch and he's with...
At the end, they show a bullet.
No, yeah, the bullet falls out. Yeah. Bullet falls out. It's
but
adamantium.
He doesn't. But in the scan, the adamantium isn't going to heal. There would be a hole. There would be a hole in the
I'm sorry. You have to go somewhere.
Kumail, thank you for being.
No.
Like, I just got genuinely mad.
I look
mad.
Forward to bringing up to my next thing why I'm late. We were having an argument. About, have you seen Wolverine Origins?
You haven't? No. God damn it!
All right, well, watch it and then I'll explain it.
Have you seen
later.
Benjamin Button at least? No.
What's the deal with Benjamin Button, right? Why don't I just take him to the doctor? Thank you, Chris. Yes, every Sunday at 10 p.m. is Silicon Valley.
Yes, or on HBO Go.
And Indoor Kids, of course, is me and Emily Gordon,
yes.
My wife. Hosting a video game podcast, so listen to that. Please.
Listen to that as well. It's one of the oldest podcasts on the network, too.
Yeah, it's been great. It's so interesting. Like, when I do The Road, there's still a lot of people who come for Indoor Kids. A lot of people come for Indoor Kids. Like, it's the most after now Silicon Valley. It's Indoor Kids.
That's fantastic.
For a lot of people, it's their first comedy show.
Oh, wow.
When we did Meltdown, there were these people who were Indoor Kids people and then became fans of Meltdown. Like, 4 or 5 different groups that live in different parts of the country came for one taping, and they met each other and hung out together for the first time at the Meltdown tapings this year. So it's interesting how, like, people, like, through Meltdown, a lot of people have become friends and started dating.
Boy.
And
we get it,
I really
it,
feel like we really made something really special.
Yeah, and
just bringing people together.
Well, I think it's good not to start a podcast that's limited to say how many films are in a film series.
No, that's perfect.
Wait, what?
Get the fuck out. There's
Who
no
said?
End in sight of this. This is not. There's Wait. No end in sight of
I'm sorry.
This.
Who said?
There is no end in sight.
Who said we were talking about you? That's very narcissistic.
25,000 episodes later, we're still doing this. And guess
Jonah,
what?
What's he
we
going
can't
on about?
Stop. We have to keep going.
You saw about
there's
X-Files
no
files.
End in sight.
Maybe once all the Stand By Me references are done, you guys can wrap up this podcast.
Oh my god, well done. All right, thanks for having me, dude.
First time I ever saw Dead Body.
Thanks, dude.
When the night has come.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.